The Shaq Show is a production of iHeartRadio. Ever since I started dreaming about doing this show, I have wanted to get people from other walks of life who love golf on to discuss elements in their arena of business or sport, to hear their perspective of our sport and to maybe to see the parallels. And I've always been fascinated by the parallels between tennis and golf. Even though they look so radically different, they share quite a bit, I think, in common in terms of who plays the sports, the people who tend to like both and tend to be good at both. And no one has fascinated me more on that topic than the person I wanted to get on as soon as I could, and that is Cliff Drysdale, the longtime ESPN tennis broadcaster. He's the 1972 U.S. Open doubles champion. He was a finalist in the U.S. Open. He has been at ESPN as a broadcaster since 1979. My dad, Lynn, and Cliff announced some events in the 80s together on tennis, and I got to meet him as a young man, but I haven't spoken to him since that time. But as a fan of tennis, particularly the Grand Slam events that are on ESPN, I just love whenever Cliff is broadcasting. His voice has just a calming effect, especially in times like these. I thought, oh, even more reason to talk to him. But selfishly, of course, I have some views, as some of you might know, on the role of technology, the influence of different things, and that influence the way our sport is played at all levels. So I know tennis has made some changes in recent years to their ball to make the Grand Slam events more interesting. So I wanted to talk about that with Cliff, and also team tennis, which is has some interesting parallels with what's going on in tennis, trying to mimic things that are going on in golf. And then, of course, in golf, we have the Premier Golf League concept that is a threat to the PGA Tour model, but also one that may be shaped by some things that are going on in tennis. Tennis is shaping some of their things they've seen with our Ryder Cup and different events. So he's a member of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. He is the pioneer of the two-handed backhand, and he loves, loves golf. And this is Cliff Drysdale. I spoke to him just a bit ago in Austin. And Cliff, the thing I wanted to ask you most, first of all, is just simply, how did you get into golf as somebody who was an elite tennis player growing up in South Africa?
We lived in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. I was at school there. From about the time when I was, let's say, 8 or 9 years old. We lived opposite a golf course, the Port Elizabeth Golf Club. And that's where I learned to play, because my mother was an enthusiastic golfer, and she would go out, and every so often I'd be allowed to go out and hang out with her and play golf. And that's how I started with golf.
But tennis was where in your life at that point?
Tennis was number one.
Okay.
Tennis was number one. Tennis was my way of that was sort of who I was. Because there was a point, I was generally a pretty good athlete, and so I was good at cricket also. And I played cricket, golf, tennis. We were very much encouraged in South Africa in those years, probably still, to play a variety of different sports, which is what I did. But I was a good cricketer, and I was but tennis was my thing, because I was the best tennis player around, and so that became my thing. Plus, I love playing the game.
Tennis or golf or both?
No, I've had a lifelong love affair with golf. From the time that I took it up, it was just not. It never occurred to me to ever take it seriously. For me, it was always a fun thing to do, and great way to communicate with friends, and I never stopped. I mean, from even on the tour, the joy for me was to find a place to play golf. And that's what I used to do. I never met anyone who was more enthusiastic about golf than Vidas Gerulaitis, because he would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in Paris. I'll never forget. and take a car out to one of the Paris golf courses, and he'd be back ready for his shows, for our shows at, you know, at 11 o'clock in the morning. I could never quite join him with that. But what was nice about it was that I knew that he was playing every day. So that if I felt like playing, all I had to do was call him and say, where are we playing today?
He didn't do that when he was competing, right?
I didn't know him really well. Okay. Because when he was competing, because he was a generation after mine. But this was when he joined ESPN and we were doing broadcasts together.
And how did you get to meet Jack Nicklaus and get to know him?
I met him in Lakeway, Texas, when he was doing a promotional round of golf. So they invited me to play golf with him and golf and tennis. We did a tennis thing at the World of Tennis, and then we went to the golf course and played 9 holes of golf with the pro and the tennis pro. And so that was the first time I met him. And I want to say that was in probably the mid-70s. But then I really reconnected with him, well, twice. Once doing an interview with him when I did British Open for ESPN. And that was probably the 90s. And then, but then I moved to Miami from North Carolina, and that's when I reconnected with Jack. And Butch Buchholz, who is one of my close friends, had a really close relationship with Jack, still does. And so I got in on a little four ball with Jack and myself, and Butch and one other guy who's did a lot of landscaping for Jack at his house. So that became a regular game, and we would play, let's say once, on the average, probably once a month in the wintertime.
And he loves, some days we kind of think he almost loves tennis more than golf, because he's such a passionate fan of the sport. Have you two discussed the two sports a decent amount?
Yeah, a lot. And, we tend to change our minds for things. And but he built 3 beautiful grass courts at his house, which I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. And they are kept in such sensational shape because he is pretty anal about, you know, the way things should be with grass. And consequently, he has these beautiful grass courts. Now, he's slowed down a bit here lately, but and I left Miami 3 years ago, so we have seen each other just from time to time since that time. But I do know that he is not as he's not as interested in getting out and playing tennis anymore, and I think that's more a physical thing than anything.
Sure.
Whether he loves it more than golf, I don't know, but I will say that it was always sort of like, okay, we're going to play golf, and then we're going to play tennis, and we used to come there and play at his house, and I'm thinking, man, I'm dragging, and he is still out there ready to play tennis until the sun goes down.
Well, we see him in the Royal Box at Wimbledon, and putting on a jacket and tie is not his favorite thing in the world. So when you see that, you know he loves the sport still. It's for us, it's wonderful. As you know, he's just an incredible ambassador for all of sports, not just golf, but we love to hear from him. So one of the things that I wanted to speak to you about today and regarding Mr. Nicklaus's views on kind of the evolution of our sport are the interesting parallels between tennis and golf, and you being someone who has played both for your life, I think would be interesting to hear from as to how you see these things evolving. And in particular, we have seen an improvement in tennis, at least me as a casual fan, in recent years, where the sport feels a little more enjoyable to watch, and certain legends have managed to hang around, and a little more variety of styles seems to be coming back. It's not like it used to be. But I was wondering if you could help us understand what has happened in tennis, especially at the Grand Slam events, with the ball or anything else they've done with surfaces to try and get back some of the older characteristics of the sport. If they have, I believe they have, though. Is that correct?
It's a very involved question because it's so important how they handle these things. In other words, my greatest nightmare is if we had eight out of ten top players playing the John Isner kind of game and trying his best to break serve at some point, knowing that he's never going to get broken. So tennis wrestles with these things all the time. And there's the opposite, which was probably the second most boring thing you can watch in tennis is like Mats Wielander and Guillermo Vilas maybe playing the final of the French championships on clay. They're both standing by and hitting the ball back to each other like this was just a gigantic ping pong table. And that was also deathly boring. What has happened here and what has made it so exciting in this last generation is the variety that that Federer and Novak, Djokovic and Rafa Nadal, to a lesser extent Andy Murray, have been able to bring to the game, because neither one of them relies on any one shot. They rely on this combination that they have and the true athletic geniuses. But the ball question, it's so easy to change the character of a tennis contest by changing the character of the tennis ball. The more you allow it to fluff up and the slower that it becomes, the longer, in theory, the rallies should last. And they have experimented with different balls and the different characteristics and continue to do, because it has to be done in concert with the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can make a hard court like at the US Open or in Australia, for example, as slow or as quick as you like by just the amount of sand that you put in the top layer of acrylic. And so the things have sort of got to work together and can. Now, it's not as easy on grass, but they definitely, Wimbledon, slowed the game down on grass by doing two things, making the grass courts a lot harder and a lot easier in a certain way, and then slowing the balls down so that the serve and volley was not the only thing that could win points. That started with Borg when he was able to stay back and win matches at Wimbledon and win the tournament, because before that was unthinkable, in my era and a little later than that. So when Borg came along, was able to win the French and then win Wimbledon, that's what made it so special. But this is a constantly evolving question, though. It's constantly evolving, and you have to re-examine it, because you've also got the strings in a tennis racket that make a huge difference. You've got the tennis rackets itself. So you're dealing with not just the ball and the surface. You're also dealing with the upgraded technology that these racket manufacturers keep coming up with, and you have to try to balance those things.
Is that controversial in tennis, these attempts to make it better? Because as you know in golf, and I'm sure from talking to Mr. Nicklaus, it's very controversial to have that discussion because there are financial interests thinking of selling golf balls. But is it something you deal with in tennis that way?
No, I don't think. I think the main thing for tennis, and it should be the same for golf, is just that we want the sport to grow and we want the sport to be exciting. And it's far more important to have a good presentation than it is to worry about whether Dunlop is going to be able to make some inroads into the tennis racket business again. So I don't see that as a major issue in tennis. I don't see the manufacturers pulling anybody any which way. The professional product that tennis is producing now and the last generation is as good as it has ever been. There was a time when I thought that, you know, the Agassi, Sampras, Courier, Chang era could never be surpassed, but it was.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to ask you a question about your view of this element of golf. All right, we're back. So do you watch a lot of golf still?
I do not watch a lot of golf. I watch generally the majors, yeah. which is probably true of a lot of people.
Yes.
But that's the way it is, and I'm obviously interested in it more on the technical side. The sporting side for me, I don't is not that compelling.
Yeah. Do you see some of the parallels with kind of a power game and the interest in that, the sort of short-term excitement that's created by that with golf being similar to the ones that probably fueled people's initial fascination with as you mentioned, an Isner or previously Pete Sampras? Do you see that those parallels between the two sports?
I do not. I have not noticed that. I'm more a participant than I am a spectator. So if I'm watching the golf telecasts of the Masters, for example, I'm fascinated by what I learn because there's obviously a lot that I don't that I truly don't, and nor do I pay any particular attention to. And I look at it more from the television business and the fact that I would really like for the announcers to fill us in a little, you know, in as much depth as possible as to what's going on and the kind of things that you're talking about. I do not see golf just in general as a general observation as a product in a negative way. I don't think that's true. I don't think that the golf presentation is anything other than it's always been, which is really top class. I just think that the thing that both tennis and golf are struggling with is continuing, to try to upgrade the numbers of people that are playing.
Yeah.
And that part I think is the challenging part.
It is, The two sports that are the most played by people and watched, and it's and in particular in golf, it's really shifted in recent years to very focused on power and getting more distance and buying more distance, and so the numbers haven't grown though with that with the clubs being easier to hit than ever, and something similar happened with tennis and the rackets, and I believe it really didn't the larger racket. Would you say has it helped grow the sport or has it sustained the sport?
Again, that is just one component of so many components that change the character of the sport. The bigger racket definitely helped the viability of being able to play different shots more effectively, like topspin, for example. Then the strings became a part of that dynamic, and again, just so many different different things that you have to consider, more so than golf in tennis, because the surfaces in tennis are so different. Golf, you've got different grasses, and obviously you've got different speeds, et cetera, but you're basically playing on grass, no matter where you are. Look, the one thing that Jack told me that I'm sure you're probably aware of, and this was when I interviewed him at the British Open that year, and then he said that golfers should all be playing with the same ball.
Yes, yes.
Just like we do in tennis. Is that part of the discussion?
Yes, it's really interesting. He's been very consistent on that topic for a long time. And if you can believe it, Cliff, people actually criticize him for his stance and are hard on him, even though he's the greatest player who ever lived. even though he is coming at it from a perspective of a big picture, not a selfish perspective. And he's been doing it since the late 70s. And yet people sort of mock him for this stance. Now, Tiger has come to his side of things as well. His view is the ball, both of them feel like the ball obviously goes too far, and then it now moves less. And so you see less shot making, you see less shot shaping, and you see it harder for a truly elite player to differentiate themselves in their view. And then they've designed courses, both of them, and it comes from a point of view of the absurdity of just trying to keep expanding the footprint of the game to accommodate a small number of people. So he's been very consistent on that view, and it's a big part of our sport and a big dilemma we're facing right now. And then now in this downturn or this point where we're not playing, it's a chance to reflect on it again. And that's why I'm fascinated by the parallels with what tennis has done to make it more interesting.
Yeah.
On that topic, I was hoping to kind of get your perspective on Roger and Rafa and their longevity, because another component we're seeing in this is the way golf is played now. It's very power driven. It's very much go and have a great few years and then you're gone. And the chance to have a longer career, either because we have more injuries or just because that form of golf isn't very interesting to play. And we're seeing a turnover rate and sort of it's harder to differentiate yourself. Do you feel that these changes that tennis has made to with the ball, these tweaks, has helped keep Roger and Rafa around, or are they just unique talents who would have done this no matter what happened?
No, I think they've injected each other with an enthusiasm quotient here that keeps them going. That's true of Novak as well. Unfortunately, Andy Murray sort of by the wayside now. But I don't think that there's anything technical that has kept them going and has allowed them to enjoy such longevity. I think that's purely part of their physical makeup. Mm. It's an incredibly difficult sport. I think much more difficult than golf is in so many ways, because your conditioning has got to be absolutely superb to play for 4 hours in the hot sun, running side by side to side. And then the mental side of the game is probably as compelling as it is in golf, because even though it's a moving ball and it's different, it is just compelling. I think it's about the strength of mind of these guys, plus the fact that winning begets winning, and once you start winning, then that makes it more fun and more enjoyable. And they have been able to stay so consistently at the top that why would they stop while they can play as well as they do? So I don't think it's the product of the change, the circumstances and the courts and the balls. Hmm. I just don't think that plays much of a part in this. I think the ATP is interested in presenting the sport in the best possible way as well. Those guys have had a lot of input in that. And I do think that the tournaments pay very close attention to what the top players say about the conditions and about the balls, etc.
Mm. Well, I'm going to take one more break, and then you've set me up perfectly for the other topic I wanted to ask you about here on The Shaq Show. So you mentioned the ATP. You were the first president. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you have seen quite a few debates, controversies, elements. I've heard you on telecasts and in interviews mention you'd like to see the structure more like what the PGA Tour does. And I don't want to go down all the various messes, but that I'm sure you've seen over the years and debates. In fact, I even saw a piece today that Roger mentioned. It's time to get the men and women all under one umbrella. But what I really wanted to dive into with you, because I saw a fascinating discussion with you and Chrissy, I believe, at the Australian Open this year. I believe it was about the Laver Cup and team events. And I don't know if you know, there's a group that is trying to propose that golf, the top players leave the PGA Tour and go to this new concept that's individual tournaments, but it ends with a team element, and it's based off of Formula One. And you would have the first few years, Tiger Woods might have a team and Phil Mickelson might have a team. And I'm curious, in all the years of tennis's various dances with the team component, if you could help us understand what tennis is grappling with on that front, is it thinking of trying to make its sport more interesting in the weeks that are not the Grand Slam events? Is that about right?
No, I would say that is definitely not. Look, so let me take a step back.
Okay.
Because I find that what you're saying is very interesting and a really good question and topic. Look, I have been saying for years that tennis should be more like golf in as much as golf has, at least from where I sit, seems to experiment with different ways to present the sport. You've got team competitions, and then you have within a sport the different ways of counting who's winning, like, you know, the Ryder Cup, and it's got, I guess, each day of a different format slightly. That's fascinating.
Correct.
Stuff, and it's just then the skins game that you know, that was obviously a very different story, but it was different also, and it was exciting, and it was, to me, it was fun to see different formats. And then, as you said, bringing the women in is something that I don't think golf has done much of, obviously not like tennis. So I would not disagree with that. But again, I think that golf has been a lot more proactive, and I have the sense that golf sits down at the end of every year, like they should, and like most sports in this country do, and say, listen, how can we make this and how can we present this better? I've been upset with tennis for years that we have had so little of that. That said, in the last couple of years, we at ESPN sat down with a whole group of administrators from both the majors and the ATP and the WTA, and they were nice enough to get together and allow us to make a presentation, which basically said to this group, we at ESPN have spent a lot of money on the sport of tennis, and really, bottom line is, all we are interested in doing is presenting the sport in a better way, making it more exciting, making it more lively, making it more fun for the people, for our viewers to watch. No, we're not interested in trying to take over the game or a segment of the game. In other words, no ulterior motive. And I think that meeting was the start of the administrators of this game, as disparate as they are, to really give some thought to the way that the game is presented. And it has to a large extent, I think, worked. I think we've now have got the Laver Cup, which is a different format. We've got a new format, Davis Cup, which I think has been a disaster, but at least there's an attempt to change up what was something that was way, way out of date, the Davis Cup. And then the Australians have got this ATP Cup, which I think has probably got the best chance of success, because it has this team competition concept within a season just before the Australian Open. I think golf showed the way. Tennis has been slow to follow, but is now beginning to realize that they've got to get on board with more exciting ways to present the game.
What went wrong with team tennis in the, it was the late 70s, I believe, and it had incredible names and behind it. It seemed like all the top players played. What? Why did it not succeed?
Oh, that's another difficult question to answer. I played it, and yeah, we had some, you know, Lavo, who was at his best at that time. He played some, Rosewall. It had the names. It's not clear to me why it didn't succeed, other than the fact that it was competing with the tour, so that the majority of the enthusiasm for the summer, which is when World Team Tennis was played, it has survived. It still happens. The problem with it now is that the numbers for the top players have become so staggeringly high that it's very difficult to make it work as a business. So you no longer get the real big names playing because you can't pay them enough, basically.
The ATP Cup you described is similar, almost identical, really, to the concept that this group is trying to do in golf. And one of the things that that's made them attractive to people is that a younger generation is more attracted to team sports than they are individual sports. Obviously, there's a financial element that they that's driving it, the valuation of us having a franchise. The team here in L.A. was the L.A. Strings, I believe, in team tennis. Who did you play for?
I played for the San Diego Friars.
Okay.
And then the Anaheim Oranges.
Wow. Where did you play in that? Was it the convention center or the... Because it was indoors always, right? The Anaheim was...
What were the options for Anaheim?
Yeah, it was probably the convention center. There was no arena then.
Yeah.
And the Strings played, of course, at the Forum. I know that from when my dad worked for the Lakers and went to team tennis. I can still remember it. But so there's a financial element of and the ego element of franchise owners, and that part of it is driving the money side. But there is something to people no longer being as infatuated with individual sports. And so it's something that has really shaken things up in golf in terms of people's thinking of our just having 40 events a year and spread all over the world and different tours.
But you've got to admit, you've got the Ryder Cup and
well, the President's Cup. And that's actually...
President's.
And when people see that kind of competition, Cliff, the emotion that comes out, both because of match play and because of playing for a group, has shown the weekly stroke play to be very boring. And I wonder if the same thing has happened in tennis, where when people do see the Laver Cup or the Davis Cup at its peak, that it makes, other than those great moments in the Grand Slam quarters and semis, or maybe the nighttime in the U.S. Open, it makes the rest of the year look pretty dull.
Yes. I agree, Jeff. Let me make it very clear. When I said that I've been trying to fight this fight for years, it has not been anything that I spent a lot of time on. But any chance I get, I would say we need different formats, and then a team format. Because, yeah, I completely agree. When you get teams together and there is an enthusiasm quotient surrounding somebody else that you're pulling for to win, whereas in normal circumstances, you don't really care about anybody else who's in the 128 field. You just care about who your next opponent is, and you hope that it's a donkey.
All right. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned earlier that you watch a golf broadcast, thinking of it as a broadcaster as much as anything. One of the things that we struggle with in golf is it's a gentleman's game, which is a wonderful part of our sport, but it also makes the announcing just way less interesting than what I hear when I listen to tennis. Why are tennis analysts so much more free with their opinions than golf analysts? Do you notice that?
You know, I'm right in the middle of it. So my friends who are part of the ESPN tennis family, and it really is a family. I mean, it's not, we have our little squabbles, but for the most part, I think there's an ease. I don't think any of our our guys feel constrained by anything. You know, and we've got a couple of loose cannons like Brad Gilbert, for example, and maybe to a lesser extent, Pam Schreiber, who will throw in things that become the subject of some conversation. I mean, I'm glad you think that we have more, we sort of have more excitement in our broadcast than golf. On the other hand, you know, golf is what it is. I'm not sure that I want to hear the guys going crazy. You know, it's not that easy to go ooh and ah about a great drive, because there are great drives that happen all the time. So my interest mainly in watching a golf telecast is to be educated. I just want to know about who the guys are, give me a little bit of their history, their humanity, and their accomplishment, and so that I can sort of get into the next hole. Well, that's slightly off the subject of what you were asking me, though, because I do feel strongly that golf has done a good job of different formats, and if that's continuing, and there are other ways of presenting the sport, I'm 100% for it, and I think it would help the game of golf.
Well, we hope so too. We're trying, as I mentioned, just getting a mixed event has been difficult, and trying to get something in the Olympics that's beyond stroke play and gets countries involved has been a bit of a controversial topic in our sport as well. Are you playing much golf these days?
I am still playing quite a lot. Unfortunately, my game has deteriorated pretty dramatically in the last 6 months, and I'm not sure why. And it's pretty disgusting, to be perfectly honest with you, Jeff. And because you know, I had a very high opinion of my own talent quotient until this last year. So I still play tennis, and I still play, but I play more golf than tennis now, because it takes longer for one thing.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really enjoyed it. I love your work so much. Everybody I know loves listening to you on tennis, and it's nice to hear your voice and know that you love our sport, golf, as much as you do. And I thank you again for the insights. I'm sure we could go all day talking about the ball and the game. But so thank you so much, Cliff. I really appreciate it. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Cliff as much as I did. It's so wonderful to hear his voice right now. We don't get to hear live sports and some of the announcers who make them special, and I just love what ESPN does on tennis, and not just Cliff, but Chrissy Evert and Pam Shriver and Brad Gilbert, as he mentioned, and of course, John McEnroe. All such enjoyable announcers to listen to, so opinionated. But as you know and found out today, Cliff has his views too, and what a life he's lived in his sport. And aren't we lucky that he loves both tennis and golf? I would love to sit around and listen to him and Jack Nicklaus discuss the elements of their sports and eavesdrop on that conversation. It was fascinating, though, to learn from him that how different some of the views are of these tweaks that tennis has made to prevent just being a serve and ace game, and that it is a different climate, different atmosphere than golf, where there is more of a consumer element and a tie-in to selling equipment to golfers versus tennis, where it really is being done to try and help the sport. Fascinatingly, I'd love to tell you that in the show notes, I've got all sorts of interesting articles to read about the tweaks they make to the balls at the Grand Slam events in tennis. But it's a mysterious topic. If you go probe around the internet, it's very hard to find good stories on that. Occasionally, you'll hear a McEnroe or a Cliff Drysdale talk about it a little bit on the air, but it's something they don't really advertise that much. It was also fascinating too to learn that. Federer and Nadal, the two all-time greats that we're getting to watch and hopefully get to watch again soon, who've already given us so much and hung around so long that he feels their longevity is not a product of these changes, which I have read people and heard people say that some of these things have been done to keep them around, which seems kind of like a harebrained, ridiculous thing. I think it's just to make the sport more interesting, and that's ultimately why a lot of us have the views we have on power and golf, that there's more to just bombing the ball out there and hitting a wedge onto a green, and we'd love to see the ball move a little bit more and all that good stuff. So anyhow, I want to thank you, as always, for listening to The Shaq Show. It's a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeart, visit the iHeartRadio app. It's wonderful and gives you some great notifications when fresh shows download. There's some excellent golf shows, as you know, from Paige Brannick and Shane Bacon and Max Homa and, of course, Hank Haney. So check those out. And you can do it on the app or at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you again for listening to The Shaq Show. We'll be back soon.